African National Congress and his delegation, Mr. Lekwede, and we'll take it from there. And welcome, and thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the IEC, and all the commissioners. Take this opportunity also to acknowledge the administrators of our elections, the whole delegation of the IEC. Take this opportunity also to acknowledge opposition parties and all the monitors, colleagues from the media, and all present in this particular public hearings. Our delegation is of the African National Congress, the governing party. With us, we've got Vincent Smith, Comrade Vincent Smith. You know him, he's the former chair of the ADO committee that led to this law. We have Andrew Snell, Comrade Andrew Snell, the former Deputy Minister of Cooperative Governments and Traditional Affairs, is now with us at head office, all of them for institutional memory. We have next to me Comrade Phoebe Potritter, our General Manager at Luthuli House, and the full-time head of administration. We have also the current chief whip of the majority party in the National Assembly, Comrade Pemi Majodina, and of course myself as the leader of the delegation. I think just for purpose of this exercise, we have to introduce ourselves as a party, because we are the African National Congress of South Africa. We are the National Liberation Movement, an African nationalist movement in terms of ideological orientation, a disciplined force of the left whose main historical mission is to liberate blacks, but Africans in particular, to unite Africa, to ensure that we have a united, democratic, non-racial, non-sexist, and a prosperous South Africa. Now, that's where basically we thought we should start, just to remind ourselves that we are not just a party that contests elections. We are also a national liberation movement. We will start with our submission immediately. We have prepared some slides for the commission, but we'll start with our introduction on our position as the African National Congress. That as the ANC, this law is a practical expression of the ANC commitment to constitutional values of fairness, equity, accountability, and transparency. It will deepen democracy, protect our sovereignty, and usher in a new culture of transparent funding for political parties. For many years since the ANC, we drove this process in our conference resolution and in Parliament, and to that particular extent, our last National Executive Committee has extended some of the regulations and rules that we'll use as the ANC in future for our internal democracy, so that we ensure that whoever is going to campaign or who's going to be funded for any position in the ANC, that we put it clear through the eye of the needle and ensuring that we have our own internal democracy in terms of regulations of funding of individual campaign leaders or whoever. But as the ANC, we are a party in government that will attract elements who seek to manipulate, influence, and remove the will of the majority away from the ANC if left unregulated. The ANC will support the IEC to successfully implement the Act and regulations at the earliest possible time, and we urge the IEC to consider what it will take to successfully implement the draft regulation by addressing issues of the IEC and parties' capacity, the practicality of systems and requirements, and the need for education and training for parties, for public, and the potential donors. Political parties are the main vehicles for public participation in our democracy and for effective representation of different constituencies and communities. To do this, parties need as many branches and members as possible. For an example, the ANC has about 4,700 branches and around 1 million members. 95% of them are volunteers. And it's not only these particular branches, we also have our ANC Youth League, our ANC Women's League, our ANC Veterans League. We also have alliance partners, COSATU, Congress of South African Trade Unions. We have SAMCO, South African National Civic Organization. We have also the South African Communist Party, which are also parties which are in alliance with us, independent from us, not necessarily some of our desk. They are independent alliance partners. So when we talk of possible money or funding, we would also, by the way, just mention them for purpose of this act. To the purpose of this act is to enhance democracy by regulating party funding and to deal especially with the limiting of influence of large donors and foreign entities. To this extent, I'll give over to two of my colleagues and comrades, Phoebe Potriter as the next one, and the last one is Andre Snell. Over to you, Comrade Phoebe.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Chairperson. All protocols observed. Parties and ones with a movement character like the ANC rely overwhelmingly on volunteers who embark on activities, raise funds at a local level. At every level in the ANC, this is from branch, sub-regional, regional, provincial, as well as national level. Much of the funding is small donations made by members or supporters or in kind, for example, petrol or sandwiches for election day workshops or general meetings. There are literally hundreds of thousands of in-kind and nominal cash donations, and the majority of them are not captured as individual donations in a national accounting system. Branches raise funds for their own needs, and we have around 4,700 branch accounts for the funding they raise. Some branches raise only a few hundred, and more successful ones a few thousand per year. We believe that it was not the intention of parties in Parliament that these kinds of donations should be regulated, but that big donors and foreign donors should be disclosed and limited to curtail undue influence. We have staff and officers at regional, provincial and national level. All have bank accounts that may get bigger donations and can be more easily linked to the national account as they are staffed and supported from national office, but we don't necessarily have that at branch level. Funds raised could be captured and aggregated nationally to see if any large donors are approaching the 100,000 Rand disclosure threshold. Doing this for all branches is extremely onerous for parties and the IEC, and the ANC and other larger parties have expressed this, and it will be even more difficult for smaller parties who have less of an infrastructure. The second practical issue that we want to raise is around donor uncertainty about the disclosure and the obligations on them that may affect funding. The donors are already nervous about falling foul of the Act, and it was very difficult for all parties to raise money in the last elections. It is possible that fundraising will become tougher. The Multi-Party Democracy Fund is meant to deal with donors who want to be neutral or wish to remain anonymous, but regulations as they are now and amendments to the PAEA may defeat this intention. The MPDF also currently offers no possibility of tax-free donations, and I think that the two previous speakers have raised these issues. We are already underfunded to maintain our policy and democratic processes, our relationships with people, oversight over those in government, as well as campaigns for elections. Democracy is not cheap, and parties are crucial players in a democratic system. Many provinces also provide some support for political parties. This will stop under the new Act, and all parties will therefore receive much less than before unless budget vote at national level is increased. If the Act and regulations limit funding sources, only the fiscus will be able to fill the gap.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think maybe then to move towards conclusion and our proposals. I think the first point is just to again to reiterate that the ANC supports the expeditious implementation of the Public Party Political Funding Act and the vast majority of the regulations. We also support an approach that is well planned, realistic, effective and sustainable. So we just want to make 9 broad points around the implementation. Firstly, that these regulations must give effect to the PPFA. not go beyond it. If there's any need to review or to amend the Principal Act, we believe that the proper parliamentary processes should be followed. It should not be done through regulation. Secondly, the regulations must recognize the different realities under which political parties operate and the practical challenges that they face. We have big parties, we have small parties, national parties, regional parties, unitary parties, federal parties. Third point is that we must avoid unimplementable legislations that attempt to cater for each and every possibility, eventuality, and scenario. This will discredit and undermine the core objectives of the PPFA. We're basically saying, let us get the basics right. Let us do the essential core objectives of this act. Let's achieve that. If there's a need to amend, to adjust, to cater for other things, those can be done later on, or I'm sure that the courts would interpret the legislation appropriately. Fourthly, the PPFA regulatory cloth must be cut according to the capacity of both the IEC as well as the political parties concerned. And in that, I think in a government context, one would talk perhaps about a regulatory impact assessment. And I think that should be done if it hasn't already been done. The fifth point would be that we need to avoid an overly complex system that discourages donations and drains public resources into compliance, away from promoting multi-party democracy and desperately needed public services. The sixth point is that we should proceed as fast as possible, but also as slowly as necessary. We must avoid discrediting this important attempt to strengthen our constitutional democracy through a rushed and botched implementation. Seventh, the PPFA implementation requires careful coordination and sequencing of public education, capacity building, establishing systems and institutions, and allocation of public funding for political parties. I think former Minister Vali Musa referred to the heart of the logic of this act. Public funding, on the one hand, tighter control over private funding on the other hand. So we've got to sequence those things correctly. The eighth point is that the IEC should develop a PPFA implementation plan and a roadmap, taking into account the inputs of parties and including through regular submissions to the National Party Liaison Committee. The ninth and final general point is that party funding under the existing Represented Political Parties Fund should be increased to allow parties to develop capacity to implement the Political Party Funding Act. We should also make provision to compensate for the loss of provincial legislature funding. Then, just 5 points around specific proposals regarding the regulations. Firstly, the Multi-Party Democracy Fund should be set up to allow tax incentives, and also the issue of anonymity in terms of donors to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund should not be overly complex and should not be an impediment to donations. Secondly, the party should disclose all donations above 100,000 rand, but should not be expected to report and to nationally aggregate small donations in cash or in kind from a branch level. Thirdly, reporting period should be once every 3 months, with a 3-month period between month end and reporting. Fourthly, reporting of donations, membership fees, income should be done where the parties have the capacity to actually aggregate and to report, and that would be at national level after reports from provincial and regional levels have been received. And lastly, we should simplify disclosure requirements for donors. We shouldn't discourage donations through complex declarations on forms. The IEC would have the power in terms of the Act to investigate any specific cases and complaints should they arise. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Would now allow and accept questions of clarity. we have the whole panel to answer to every question that the honorable commissioners would raise. So we are welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Lukwete and the delegation for your presentation. I will now proceed and ask the colleagues to seek matters of clarity or some engagement on the presentation that we've just received. And Judge?
I think it's generally accepted now that the target of this legislation is not the buckets of chicken or the tents or the bits and pieces that you get. It's what is being targeted is the transactional nature of politics. Vote buying is the issue here. And we haven't got to the point of how we actually stop that, because that is really within the domain of the political parties. And that's what's brought about this piece of legislation at this point in time in our history. So my question then is, what would political parties be doing to curb vote rigging, vote buying, and the transactional nature of politics? The second question is, we've heard Mr. Musa tell us that it is easy to do to disclose financial information. You have one person, you have technology, and you put it out. We hear you and we hear the DA saying that it's very impractical. So there's two questions arising from that. The one is there value in getting it done? Sorry, there's three questions. Is there value in getting disclosure of that level of detail done? Is there an alternative to getting the same degree or depth of scrutiny that would allow in some other way? And thirdly, this is a question of fact. Is it easy to do or isn't it easy to do? And what I worry about in these hearings and at this time in our history is this, that we talk rights, and the last presentation we had confirms this. We talk rights, we talk about BE, but we do wrongs. So how do you fix that gap?
Yes, no, we take one question at a time. Yeah, so they can respond. Thank you.
Okay. I think that we would completely agree with you, Commissioner, that's the core objective of the Act. In fact, as we said in our presentation, as way back as 2000, we were concerned about the role of money in politics. So your question about how do we then address what are the practical steps to address the transactional nature of politics, I think it's twofold. One of them is through an act like this that sets thresholds that allow for disclosure. And then secondly, internal parties, and about a week ago, we've taken a decision at the National Executive Committee of the ANC that we need to look at rules and regulations for lobbying within the ANC. So for leadership positions, public representatives, and that should include funding towards lobbying, because up to now we had broad rules around lobbying within for party positions, but it didn't extend to funding. So I think that certainly for the African National Congress, we see there's a broad legislation to do that, but we're also committed to looking at internally as part of the development of our internal party democracy, to look at regulations to do that. It's not going to be an easy thing. I think that South Africa is not unique in this. It's a problem throughout the world. But I think that what we need to do is to continually improve and look at how do we strengthen our systems. The second question about the easy disclosure at branch level, which I think is what you mentioned, the difficulty, I think that I, former Minister Wally spoke to, that it probably takes a clever young person with the technologies to do that. But in order to do that, you have to have a system at branch level that then accounts for all of those little donations that you look at. So every branch meeting, every transport that the person gives, etc., so that you can then establish a pattern. And I agree with you that that's not the intention of the Act, to be able to outrule this. But one of the things that the Act require us to do is to provide upfront and on an annual basis, I think the regulations, to provide the bank accounts of all ANC bank accounts. So that would be from a national level, provincial, regional, sub-region and regional level, including the 4,700 branch bank accounts. And that will be also a way of tracking if you look at the aggregation, look at whether there are danger signs that necessitates further dipping deeper, as well as then looking at disclosing if somebody is giving funeral tents or tents for rallies across the country. So I think that there are at the moment within the regulations the provisions to do that, and I certainly think that the obligation that there is on political parties to disclose upfront on an annual basis our bank accounts and the details of that is one way of making sure that you don't have unwarranted movement. What we are concerned about are those that we should not have the regulations go into areas that in fact will discourage that kind of voluntary, the spirit of voluntarism that most political parties rely on, that somebody gives a lift to five people to go to a meeting, somebody brings sandwiches to the meeting, etc. We hope that we're not going to be required to account for that in our disclosure.
So I think just again to emphasize the schema of the Act. The schema of the Act really requires that the Commission would be receiving the truncated transactions of a political party through a bank account. That's part one of the schema. Part two of the schema is that the political party will ensure that it provides the Commission with an audited statement of accounts, and that audit has to provide assurance for the entire remit of the however many thousands of accounts each political party has. The idea that you are putting forward is that somewhere for you to do that, it's hard. Okay, and I'm not quite sure, again, what you see as the alternative. I think that the important thing is that you've mentioned the lift scheme, the sandwich, and so on. The lift scheme, the sandwich on their own, do not get reported as things stand now, in the sense of ensuring that we receive from somebody who made a sandwich a fully fledged form. We don't want it, and so. But the point is that if, as the earlier presentation suggested, sandwiches are provided three times a day for every member of every branch for, you know, 3 months prior to an election, there's something about scale there. Now, we are expecting political parties to have in place the necessary system to have full oversight of that, so that you are able to disclose that. Maybe it's a good thing to get sandwiches. We're not protesting about that. But then you would disclose. What is not clear to me is where you are seeing the kind of difficulty, and I think that that's what the Commissioner was asking about. What is the alternative to the way in which I'm not talking about edits, but I'm talking about that schema. I think that there isn't one, and that's where I heard the earlier presenter saying, Mr. Musa saying, that political parties have to up their game. And so it's just to understand, firstly, whether or not that sits well with what your understanding is, and maybe not tomorrow, but what you see as a capability. Now, linked to that, my second question would be, one of your presenters, Mr. Lucueta, mentioned the issue of a roadmap and ensuring that in that sense we bring on board the necessary processes to ensure that it's not something that tomorrow we say, okay, let's go. You know, it's not a race that we're blowing the whistle. But we have to know, what do you see as the ingredients of the roadmap? Because to say there should be a roadmap, we are aware of that, but maybe what's in your heads about the roadmap is different from what we would be thinking. So we would be really welcoming your views on that.
Thank you very much. Maybe to start with the last point, I think what we would envisage is for the Commission to sit with political parties in the National Party Liaison Committee or whatever other appropriate forum, and to say that in order for us to have successful implementation of this legislation, it's going to require the following capabilities, capacities, institutions to be present both in the IEC and the respective parties. Of course, every party might approach the matter slightly differently, depending on its own constitution, its own political culture, the way that it's structured. But I think there should be an opportunity for parties to, in that forum, come forward and say, okay, us as the ANC, we have 4,700 branches. So each of those branches has at least one, sometimes multiple accounts. Those multiple accounts are not because of any nefarious purposes, but sometimes it's just in the nature of organization. You have a one branch executive committee that's elected this year, they open an account, an AGM comes, they get voted out, they don't want to go to the bank with a new BEC to hand over the account, that new BEC opens an account, and so on and so on and so forth. Those accounts are not established centrally, so they're completely devolved. So that would require the ANC and the Office of the Treasurer General to embark on a fairly lengthy and complex process of taking stock, first of all, of what accounts exist. Secondly, embarking on a process of regularizing and making sure that those accounts are in some way linked centrally. Put conversely, that the Office of the Treasurer General would have the authority, the permission, vis-a-vis the banks, to access those accounts, which currently would not be the case, because at least legally those are independent accounts set up by independent signatories. So, not to dwell too much in the detail, but I think you get the drift of the magnitude and the nature of the problem that we would dealing with. So in terms of a roadmap, I mean, it would, on that score, say, okay, it would take the ANC 6 months, a year, or whatever, to complete that task, to arrive at the point where we would confidently be able to say that we've consolidated our accounts into some system that is capable of some degree of monitoring. And I think our appeal is just that we collaboratively work through those issues, and that it's not a big bang approach to say on date X this is going to happen and then we're all going to be scurrying around, and the focus then will be on non-compliance with comparatively trivial issues, and the big objectives of the Act would be missed out.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to deal with the one issue that has been raised, I think, by both commissioners around the what goes through branch accounts and so on. I think you've raised it. The Act and the regulations make it obligatory for audited financial statements to be presented. And I don't think an auditor will append his or her signature of what the state of finances is in the organization if he or she is not comfortable that it fairly represents what's happening. So I think it's going to be covered there. Unless we don't trust the auditors, I'm sure it would be able to come out there. My difficulty, I think our difficulty was around the periods. I think somewhere spoke about it must be done monthly. It's just not possible to do it monthly. But if you ask us to do it at the end of the year through an auditor financial statements, it's doable. So we're not disagreeing with what Vali is saying and other people are saying. It's the monthly nature of it. And whilst I'm on the floor, I might as well also add that one of your requirements is that the audited financial statements must be presented to you 1 month after year end. Doesn't happen anywhere in the world that you do it 1 month after year end. It's normally 6 months. So if you could change that instead of 1 month you want the audited financial statements 6 months after year end, I think it'll cover all the concerns around the disclosing or declaring what goes through the accounts of the African National Congress. Thanks, Chair.
Sorry, thanks for that. I just want to follow up question. So, two things then. On the one hand, just to say that the National Party Liaison Committee, as I'm sure you all know, has set up a subcommittee with treasurers of all the parties, and I think that it would be great if some of the practicalities could be funneled through there in those engagements. But having said that, it also sounds as though per party there may be a need for one-on-one engagements to actually also look at, and I just wanted to be sure that that's something that you would also identify with. The second thing is just to indicate that, of course, when it comes to the multi-party democracy fund and the individual donations, there's a particular regime that would be within the purview of the regulations. But when it comes to the representative political party fund, that of course is something that has to be driven by the compliance with the PFMA. And so there could be in that sense different regimes in terms of the monthly, and I'm not talking about audits, the monthly or quarterly submissions. Is that something that you are clear about?
Yes, I think we're clear about that, and I think that ends the saying that it should be quarterly.
Thank you very much. It's just a tiny little question, just for education purposes. Am I understanding you correctly when you say that at the level of the branch, the branches have complete autonomy to open a bank account, transact? And but I'm also hearing, I think, from Mr. Nell, I think from Mr. Smith, saying that when, though, you come to the audit process would be able to sweep through those autonomously opened bank accounts. And so even though there's complete autonomy at the level of the branch, when it comes to the national perspective, you do have a mechanism of oversight. Am I hearing you correctly?
Okay, that's correct. The way that the ANC constitution as it currently works states is that the Treasurer General has the authority, according to the constitution, over all bank accounts. He or she then delegates it to branches or regions because to be in control of 4,700 bank accounts, we've got a relatively small finance staff. And the intention is certainly not to have a bloated bureaucracy to try and administer that. We'll much rather would want to spend the resources on, you know, policy development or community work that our branches should be doing. So hence the reason for that power to delegate. But there is the process of oversight. I think that the point that we made in our submission is that we need time to be able to build up that system, particularly for branches. At the moment, It's happening at regional level. We've got 53 regional offices that happen at the 9 provincial level, as well as national level, but we will need some kind of time frame to be able to do it for branches because of the current model that is very much decentralized, and the delegation to branches has allowed them to develop that autonomy in terms of opening accounts, raising funds, and then account to their branch annual meetings on the income and expenditure.
No, Jim, maybe just on a slightly light-hearted note, is that, I mean, for many, many years, I was both a branch secretary and a regional secretary, and I think in that engagement, perhaps in the party liaison committee, it would be worthwhile going into greater detail into some of the realities. I mean, I think sometimes the temptation is there to look at parties as if they were corporate entities that are very well, neatly structured, well-resourced, everything. And I think the point made in our submission is that political parties ultimately are voluntary organizations, and that the vast bulk of what happens in the ANC is done on a voluntary basis. So, yes, that is very, very positive. That's something we encourage, that we would want to keep like that. But it also has implications for the ability to do certain things in certain ways. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the ANC. I think in the presentation, you raise a number of issues that are critical. The one is your fear that we over-regulate as the Commission beyond what the law says. The DA raised that issue yesterday, and it worried me, amongst others, you know, that, you know, potentially that could be. It really is never the intention of the Commission to do so. But I think we have a challenge that we do need assistance with. And the challenge is all of those issues arise on account of disclosure. Somehow we need to deal with that. I understand that the spirit of the Act and therefore the regulations are to deal with this matter that we all deem to be important to this nation. I think that's the one thing, and that is really where we need to find each other. Civil society on the one hand, political parties on the other, business, everyone. And I think that's the one help we need. The second help is, I think there are different expectations on the Commission in respect of this, which are really concerning, and we have to say that up front. Civil society thinks we should have done this yesterday. Political parties are saying this has impact on what we do currently. We need some time to socialize it and deal with it in a clean way. We understand that. We share that perspective. There's work required from the Commission as well in that respect. It's not something we're going to wake up tomorrow, and that's why we're dealing with this. And I am appealing, Chair, if nothing else, because the complication before us is agreeing on what is in the best interest and how we account for this going forward. We certainly don't have any interest in asking for things we shouldn't be asking for. I raise that because truly we need to manage elections still. We have that duty, and we accept that this responsibility we need to deal with, but it must be an issue that facilitates, as far as I can see, that facilitates how, on the one hand, we safeguard the sovereignty and sustainability of parties, without alienating those that are minded to support the political economy, as business leadership indicated earlier this morning, as opposed to ensuring that there is no compromise in the work that we do. And I'm appealing to political parties, to civil society. That, I think, it's at the heart of this. The act is all right, if we understand, but in terms of the mechanics of doing that, that's really where we also need similar agreement. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I think we share the sentiment of the last commissioner. You know, the expectations of the IEC and the expectations of civil society and also the expectations of political parties must be managed, because there are going to be implications. And those implications cannot be decreed by a Big Bang, a Big Bang approach. Let me give you an example. This act is intended to outlaw, for want of a better word, outlaw legislatures from raising funds, not raising funds, political party. I'm talking about the legislature. Up to now, they used to have political party funding, as we have at a national level. This law is now saying that that can't happen at a legislature level. And some legislatures have processes in place already, which they're going to have to go and, what's the correct word, repeal, go and repeal it. So we must be practical and realistic that that repealing process must be allowed to happen. We all have said that if this thing must work, democracy is an expensive exercise, and I think everybody raised the fact that the fiscus is going to have to be impacted one way or the other. It's not about the amount of it, but there will be some impact on the fiscus. That's why Treasury is here. And that can't happen overnight. The budgeting process is a long process. So even if we decided today that this is what must happen, the budgetary process is not a once-off. It takes a year or two to do it. So I think we support, and we said it here, we support the phased-in approach. But it must not be a delayed phased-in approach. It must be phased in, so that it's practical, so that it's workable, so that we all can comply with what is required, but it must be done in the shortest possible time. So I think that's what we must say up front as the ANC. Let it be phased, but that phasing must not be interpreted as us delaying it. We want it to be done as soon as possible. And I think that's our expectation. Thanks.
Thank you for the inputs that we've received. Just following the presentation and the discussions, one cannot help observing something. The process, and this will be known very well by Mr. Smith and Mr. Nell, the process of taking this direction was driven by the subcommittee chaired by you, Mr. Smith. And in one of those engagements, among the things that we raised at the commission was precisely the issue of the time frame. And it was you in your capacity, when we raise issues of the resources and the capacity, that brought the agency of implementing. Now, one is sitting and listening and saying and hearing the main political parties stating that we now are sitting and putting regulations that may not be congruent with the intentions of the legislatures. And that may well be the case, And we have an obligation to actually look into those matters to the best of our ability and discharge. But also sitting here before us, there's been representations we've received from key stakeholders in our society. And from them, very clearly, is that sense that the country needs to address the concerns about political party funding. And fundamental to it is that the elephant in the room, my colleague has pointed out, is disclosure. And disclosure yesterday, not today, not tomorrow. We are headed for local government election. I'm hearing the inputs that are being made, but I'm not understanding what are we saying is that going for local government, we can still be in a position to afford not to have this imperative in place, one. Secondly, with disclosure mechanisms that meet practically the expectations of both the political players as well as the broader society in the inputs that we have received. And this is where we need to find that particular balance. But the argument that solely is based on that, that's not the intention and these are not the resources. We were very clear as the Commission about the issue of the resources. And we're very clear as the Commission the limitations and the implications we'll face. Now we've seen a Commission given the responsibility. When challenges hit the ground, we saw also that the Commission found itself under the bus. That was the clock and the addresses. So that remains an issue that what will be optimally adequate to realize what we think the legislation needs with minimal possibilities of constitutional challenges. And it is there where one is saying, can you help us? Because I'm not hearing a help from especially the main leading political parties. And this is the issue which I think we as the Commission, we would want to engage a lot more also at the party liaison level in terms of the detail. But Mr. Smith and Mr. Nell, I put it to you, you can realize that there's a variance between these two matters that are being before us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think as the Chairperson pleases, we'll try to respond to issues that the Chair raised. I'll give over to Comrade Phoebe Potritter to start, then go next off.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that the impression should not be given that we're saying that the regulations in their totality are problematic. We certainly welcome the regulations. The fact that we kept quiet about certain provisions of it means that we agree with it, or that we can live with it. In our submission, we've raised the specific areas which we think that the Commission should pay attention to. Those include, for example, the issues that we raise about in-kind, the reporting around in-kind, and I'm glad that we're finding each other around that issue. We've raised the issue around the reporting period, which I think it's reasonable. We've raised the issues around the need for simplifying issues of disclosure. So I think that we've been fairly specific. I mean, in our view as the African National Congress, for the amount of time that the Commission had it at its disposal, the regulations are really solid, and we congratulate the Commission for the work done. But we do think that there are specific issues. So that's the one issue. The second issue is that we have raised that there are instances where we would want a phased approach. We will be able to do with regards to disclosure tomorrow when it comes to the issues of those levels that we set, but we have indicated the problems that we have with the decentralized branch financial system. So in the PLC, and that is why we asked for a roadmap,
That we can then set this is how long it will take us to regularize it, and therefore the roadmap map should speak to that. The point that about this regulations as well as the implementation of the Act, I think it's critical to our democratic fabric of the country, but I also agree with what Minister Vali Musa said, is that we have to look at implementing them in a way that strengthen our democracy, not just for the now, but also for the long term. And I think that, therefore, an approach that said yes, that we need to start with the work. The Commission must provide us with a roadmap. We should be able to engage and say that this is possible within 3 months or 2 years or whatever, and then take it from there. So we certainly don't foresee a problem and the kind of fears that you're expressing, Chairperson. I think that there's a commitment towards implementation. There's a commitment towards making it work. But I think that it would be remiss from us to say that we can do X tomorrow when we then have to come back to you and say, sorry, but can you give us another 3 months when, and you will be correct to ask us, so why didn't you raise it when we raised the regulations?
Just to emphasize and not to say something different to what Comrade Phoebe said, you know, the other reality that we looked at was also your ability and your capacity as the IEC. For instance, the enforcement part of it is something that you would need to look at as the IEC and say, do we have the necessary... I know from my previous life, for instance, that you had said you must set up a unit to do this type of thing. And the question that we were saying to ourselves is that we should also give you the space to set up that unit. I know that the head was appointed just yesterday or the day before. So we are cognizant of the fact that even for you to be able to do what we expect of you from the legislation, realistically, you wouldn't be able to do it yesterday. Quite honestly, Chair, you wouldn't be able to implement this thing yesterday because you don't have the ability or the capacity to enforce some of these things yesterday. We are committed that this thing must be done as soon as possible, but we are also saying let everybody be adequately capacitated to do that is expected of them to do from the legislation. As the ANC, we will adapt our policies and do them, but we're saying that you too should also be capacitated to do it, and I don't think personally that you're capacitated at this point.
No, thank you very much. I think just as an addition to our submission, even from our last National Executive Committee as the ANC, we took a decision after realizing that even though we are a heritage that our forebears through their blood and sweat have fought for, today we are destroying one another, destroying our movement, and destroying the nation through the influence of money and patronage. And we have to do something related to this. So we even agreed to amend our through the eye of the needle, our internal policy in terms of lobbying and conferences. We even went further to want to bring in our next NGCA national conference how to regulate individual campaigns and how to fund them. That's an effort that we're doing. And equally to this particular act, we are giving our full confidence. The only issues that we're raising, it's not that we want to bash the regulations, but we want regulations to be practical in terms of how do we face them in. I mean, just now in April, all provincial legislatures with Political Party Funding Act, they've issued budgets to provincial legislatures for political parties. The principal act says immediately stop. How do we stop that? The pass has already moved. So practically we have to agree in terms of how do we face in the implementation of the regulations, taking into account those things, taking into account issues that we have practically put forward as the ANC. The Act, the regulations, we are in full support of them as the African National Congress. We are confident that they will assist us in protecting our national interest, particularly our national sovereignty, particularly undue influence from other nations in the world or other intelligence foreign agencies. It will assist us in terms of ensuring that we become a solid, a formidable democracy, which is based on values and principles as set out in our constitution. So we are in full agreement as the NC. There's no doubts or if or buts from our side. We're clear. But the only thing, Chair, is that democracy is not cheap. The national fiscus needs to be reviewed to assist us.
Thank you very much. I think we appreciate the inputs, but certainly I think the process will continue because there's a continuous engagement between ourselves and all the represented political parties through the PLC system. And as we've proposed, I think it's the due process that will still be followed in going into some of the details, because at the end of the day, the devil is in the detail. But we appreciate and thank you very much for your inputs. And I think we can proceed to the next presenter, if not mistaken. Advocate. We would like to invite the information regulator of South Africa, Advocate Pansi Klakula, to come forward and make the oral representation. Thank you. Welcome, Advocate, and over to you.
Thank you very much, and good morning to the Chair and the Vice Chair and the Commissioners. And would like to thank you for giving us this opportunity. Our presentation is quite brief because we've got just two areas that we want to comment on, and these are the areas that fall within our mandate as the information regulator. And this is how we're going to proceed. I'm accompanied by Advocate Lebogang Strom, who is a member of the regulator. Our presentation is divided into two. The first part deals with the regulation and or the impact of the Promotion of Access to Information Act on the regulation. That's the first aspect. And I will be presenting that aspect. The second aspect deals with how the Protection of Personal Information Act has a bearing on the, or should have a bearing on the regulations. So we are talking about two rights here, the right of access to information and the right to privacy. So I will deal with the right of access to information, departing from the fact that as the regulator we made submission when the Act was at the time when comments were made. So our comments really on the regulation are a continuation of the comments that we made at the time when the Act was being discussed. But we want to say that we welcome the enactment of the Act. We also welcome the regulations. We think that this is a positive addition or improvement to our democracy. And having made those remarks, we are saying that the Promotion of Access to Information Act 2 of 2002, which is PAIA, as well as the Protection of Personal Information Act, should be taken into consideration in the interpretation of the Political Party Funding Act and its regulations. And we say that Section 3.5 of the PPFA provides that a contributor may request the Electoral Commission not to disclose its identity and the amount of donation. This relates to the multi-party fund. The IEC has prescribed the manner in which this request can be made in the regulations. And such a request must be prescribed in the manner as stated in Regulation 4.2 and Form PPR1. Regulation 4.3 prescribes the factors which the IEC must consider in making a determination for the request for non-disclosure. These factors include, and I quote, any other relevant factors the Commission deems necessary, taking into account the purpose and the provision of the Act. And we think this is quite important. Unfortunately, the PPFA, the Act, your Act, does not expressly state the purpose of that Act. In these circumstances, we can deduce the purpose from the preamble of the Act, which provides, among others, as follows, that and whereas the Republic's public international law obligations require it to incorporate the principle of transparency in the funding of political parties. The principle of transparency, therefore, lies at the heart of the PPFA. Moreover, its enactment came about as a result of the court declaring PAIA unconstitutional to the extent that it did not provide for the disclosure of private funding received by political parties. The PPFA and its regulations can only have meaning and effect if they draw inspiration from the provisions of PAIA. PAIA provides that, among others, that despite all the grounds stipulated for refusal of a request for access to a record of a public or private body, the information officer of a public or of a public body or a head of a private body must grant access to a record if a body must grant access to a record of a body if the disclosure of the record would reveal evidence of a substantive contravention of or failure to comply with the law and the public interest in the disclosure of the record clearly outweighs the harm contemplated in the provisions in question. In this respect, I will draw honorable members' attention to sections 46 and 70 of PAIA. So we are saying that in making a final determination in respect of a request of a contributor not to disclose his, her, or its identity and or amount of the donation, the IEC will have to determine whether the public interest in disclosing such information clearly outweighs the harm contemplated in the provisions of the PPFA. If it does, then it must disclose the information. Put differently, the public interest override must be one of the relevant factors which the IEC must take into consideration in making a final determination in respect of a request of a contributor not to disclose his, her, its identity and or amount of donation. So, if we have to make a concrete example or a proposal, if you look at Regulation 4.3, we can probably, in that regulation, add words to the effect that the factors which the Commission must consider in the determination of the request for non-disclosure, these factors should include any other factor, including public interest. If we include the word public interest in that regulation, we will be happy. Because if we don't include the public interest override, that section might just, you know, render the whole regulation not effective, because everybody will hide under the cloak of non-disclosure, and we may inadvertently introduce opaqueness. So we have to ensure we are imploring the Commission to really build in the public interest override in the in considering whether to agree to the request not to disclose the amount or the identity of the contributor. That's really our contribution as it relates to how we link the regulations with PAIA, because we have to be alive to the fact that really the declaration of PAIA as unconstitutional is what led us to where we are today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson, Vice Chairperson, and the Commissioners of the IEC. I'll deal with the issue of the impact of the Protection of Personal Information Act on the regulations and on the Political Party Funding Act. Firstly, our act, I'll call it POPIA in short, defines a responsible party as a public or private body or any other person which, alone or in conjunction with others, determines the purpose and the means for processing of personal information. The IEC, in its capacity as the administrator or the custodian of the Act, satisfies the definition of a responsible party in terms of Section 1 of POPIA. Same as political parties are also deemed to be responsible parties in terms of POPIA. This argument is premised on the fact that political parties in terms of the Act of the Political Party Funding Act will process personal information of donors / contributors. Data subjects are living, identifiable persons and juristic persons and include private and public bodies. Therefore, donors, contributors are deemed to be data subject in terms of POPIA. The political parties will provide the IEC with personal information of donors. As such, both the IEC and political parties are responsible parties in terms of the Act, and they must comply with the 8th condition for lawful of processing of information. All the conditions, not all of them. In terms of Chapter 3 of POPIA, the conditions are set out there. The following 8 conditions for lawful processing are: 1, Condition 1, accountability. As the IEC and political parties are responsible parties in terms of the Act, when processing personal information of donors or contributors, they must ensure that the conditions for the lawful processing of personal information is complied with. Condition 2, which is very important, process limitation. Personal information must be processed lawfully and in a reasonable manner that does not infringe the privacy of data subject, which is contributors or donors. The personal information may only be processed if given the purpose for which it is processed for. It must be adequate, relevant, and not excessive. That's the principle of minimality. Personal information may only be processed if the donor or the contributor consents to such processing. And consent in terms of our Act means any voluntary, specific, and informed expression of will in terms of which permission is given for the processing of personal information. Furthermore, personal information must be collected directly from the data subject. Condition 3, purpose specification. Personal information must be collected for a specific, explicitly defined, and lawful purpose related to a function or activity of a responsible party. So if it's within your mandate that you need to process it according to a mandate, then you have to do it because it's related to your function as the IEC. That's what it's actually saying. Condition 4, further processing limitation of personal information must be compatible with the original purpose. So you cannot deviate from the purpose. If the original purpose was to collect this information for a particular purpose, you cannot go back and, you know, deviate from the purpose. Information quality, that's condition 5. A responsible party must take reasonable, practicable steps to ensure that personal information is complete, accurate, not misleading, and updated when necessary. Condition 6, openness. A responsible party must maintain the documentation of all processing operations under its responsibility, as referred to in PAIA, see section 14 and 51 of PAIA there. Condition, the second last condition, security safeguards. A responsible party must secure the integrity and confidentiality of personal information in its possession or under its control by safeguarding such personal information in accordance with POPIA. The last condition, data subject participation. A data subject having provided, a contributor or donor having provided adequate proof of identity has the right to request the IEC or political party to confirm whether or not the responsible party, the IEC or political party, holds personal information about him, the contributor or the donor, and can request a record or description of personal information held by IEC or political parties. I'm just deviating from the word responsible party so that it becomes direct. Now, we have looked at regulation PPR 1, PPR 4, PPR 6, and PPR 8. And we are of the view that they may not comply with the conditions for lawful processing, especially condition 2, 3, and 4. However, I pause to mention that we are of the view that the IEC should make that determination, because the IEC is the one which is requesting that personal information, whether the information they are requiring is excessive or not. We can't make that determination, because we have told you about condition 2 and 3 in terms of how you should process information. I mean, processing in terms of our act is very broad, include distribution, collecting, so it's broad. So we are giving it to you to say we have made a view on 1, 4, 6, and 8. But we are saying the IEC must make that determination to see whether they comply with condition 2, 3, and 4 of POPIA. In order to ensure that all the forms in the regulations are compliant with the conditions for the lawful processing of personal information, the donor and or contributor must consent to such processing. The personal information must be collected directly from the donor or the contributor. The personal information must be collected lawfully in a manner that does not infringe the privacy of the donor or the contributor. The personal information must not be retained any longer than is necessary for achieving the purpose for which the information was collected for. The IEC must secure the integrity and confidentiality of personal information in its possession or under its control by ensuring that security measures are in place to safeguard the personal information. The IEC is advised to take caution of collecting excessive personal information of donors or contributors, as this places an additional burden on the IEC to protect the personal information that it has collected. This will result in the IEC being required to put higher security standards to ensure that that personal information is safeguarded. That's all from me from POPIA.
Thank you very much for these well-considered additional inputs, of course, from the information regulator. And I think my colleagues would like to clarify all some of the matters, and let me invite the Vice Chair.
Thanks very much for the presentation. I've got questions for both of you, but if I could start with Advocate Tlakula. The issue around public interest is, once one has included it, I think we would be talking about something that is interpretive in a judicial sense, actually. And so, because there's no absolute, it's not something that is, and so the question of whether or not one would then be saying, for purposes of making those decisions, would you then be of a view that for the commission to make that decision, even though it is appealable, but for it to make the decision in the first instance, is something that would or would not be possible? I don't know if my question is clear. For us to exercise that initial discretion, in other words.
Yes, we are of the view that in exercising that initial discretion, you have to take into consideration the public interest override. Because the world over, I mean, you can find definitions of what constitutes public interest, what is in the public interest. Standards have been developed internationally in the access to information realm. So we think that this is quite important, and it will save you, I think, from making decisions that are not in line with the purpose of the Act, which is to promote transparency. Because our fear would be, and this is the fear that we voiced when we did the submissions to the Act, and Mr. Smith will tell you, if he's still there, I said at that time that if you maintain this confidentiality clause, you might find that the Act might be challenged. But we feel that if you put that public interest override, that might save you. Because otherwise, the donors will come and say, these are my reasons, please do not disclose my identity or the contribution that I made. That will defeat the purpose of the Act, in our view.
Thanks for that. So the kind of interpretive role in the initial instance, you're confirming, obviously subject to appeal. Thank you. Maybe then just turning to Popia, two things there. You've spoken about the issue of consent in terms of the person who is provided, whose information is being retained. Now, if legislation, so if a donor understands that by giving a donation, that donation is subject to this legislation, including the fact that the act of giving the donation has to be disclosed, I am wanting to ask you, would you consider this as being equivalent to consent? Are you with me? So in other words, you know the Act is in place, and you still want to give the grape party. You still want to give the grape party two lots of 50,000 rand. Are you, by doing that, knowing the Act is in place, giving consent? Because you will also have to fill in a form. So in that sense, you. But the political party, that the grape party, will have to also fill in a form, because that's the scheme of the Act, that there's a check. Are you clear that then you've given consent, both to the political party and so on? So that is my question.
Thank you for the question. We are still struggling with this principle of consent. It's a very, very complex principle in law, because, I mean, our Act defines consent, but, I mean, there are different modes of consent, and consent differs. I mean, it depends on your ability to consent, age, you know, your capacity to, it's a lot of things, but our Act is very specific. It says consent means any voluntary, specific, and informed expression of will in terms of which permission is given for the processing of personal information. What it did with our regulation, because there was a bit of a great area. I think a person, for an example, in the regulation, doesn't it provides a clause where a person can read out to say, I'm Mr. So-and-so, give consent for my information. You know, there must be something on the form, so that it's expression of will. We don't want to assume that the person knows about Popia, then obviously they're giving consent. Thanks.
And then my last question, also in relation to Popia, you mentioned the issue about the reasonableness in terms of the retention of the personal information. Now, the reasonableness relates to the purpose for retaining it, and in this instance would presumably relate to the duties that through the Act the Commission has to fulfill. And if the Act says that records must be retained for 5 years, then are you accepting that that would be constituting a reasonable time? But obviously, if then the Commission decided to extend that on its own accord to 10 years, that would be a problem. I just wanted to be sure that I understood your point.
So that relates to section 14 of POPIA that deals with retention of records. I think you're not the first organization to have that clause of, I think even the banks with fee cafes, they do have the 5 years. After 5 years, you must know, you're not allowed to retain those records anymore. It's either you destroy, delete, or deidentify those records. But it's good that it's given in your act the period, rather than it was not, you know, now you can know that after the purpose, after 5 years, you have to delete, destroy, or deidentify that record.
Thank you very much for this. I'd like to first make a follow-up to the question that Commissioner Love raised, but I want to nuance it. And I'm sure we can discuss it even after the hearings and consult with yourselves. You have listed a number of forms that you're concerned about, and we take your warnings seriously. You have missed concerns raised in that respect, and those concerns are concerning to us that we may inadvertently overregulate. You're raising that very clearly. But I want to make an example. Form PPR 6. The intention is very clear there. We want someone with good intentions to indicate to us, you know, they are donating money or in kind, whatever it is that they're doing. Our understanding is that you are raising that form in specific terms and saying we might be, you know, overextending ourselves or overreaching, whatever the case might be. The question I raise is in respect of disclosure, essentially. Because at the heart of the discussion we are having, it's on the one hand, civil society, and really, the fact that we've come to this point, seeking disclosure of what is donated or given to political parties. On the other hand, it is those that are making this donation saying, I want to be careful about the issue was raised here, that if they are giving out of a good heart, why would they want to hide that? But political parties also raising the concern that we mustn't alienate to the extent that... So the issue is really disclosure. And that is one issue we are struggling with. We have no intention of over-regulating. We just need to manage the expectation to be a good, what do you call it? You called us an information as responsible. We just want to be responsible. That's and we are struggling within this hearings. On the one hand, it is clear that there's concern that we'll over-regulate if we're not careful, but there is another expectation that says, in doing so, you're going to hide what essentially brought us to this point. We just want to hear what you have to say on that.
You have a very difficult task of balancing the right of access to information against the right to privacy. And we came here deliberately, strategically, that we don't want to tell you what is excessive and what is not excessive. You have to make that call, because you are the ones who know why you are collecting this information. You are the ones, whether it's excessive or not, whether it's for the purpose for which you have to do this work, that we need people's banking accounts, you have to make that call. We don't want to give advice, because we are also a regulator. We are mindful of the fact that in future we might have a complaint against you of non-compliance with the provision of POPIA. So we don't want, when that moment arises, for you to say, but we acted on your advice. So we are not giving you advice. We are simply saying, look at POPIA, look at your forms, look at whether they comply with all the conditions for lawful processing of personal information. We are also saying to you, you are putting onto yourself a big burden, because people are not aware the amount of cybersecurity that is happening in this country. Just this week, even City Power was there was a cybersecurity. So cybersecurity data breaches are very, very real, and they happen every month. So we are saying, in your strategies as well, you have to ensure that you put adequate top security measures in place to ensure that this sensitive personal information that you have will not be compromised, because the fines are very high for compromising personal information of data subjects. So you will have to put in place cyber security resilient strategies. You have to bear that in mind, because you're going to collect, you already have sensitive personal information in your voters' roll. Now you are going to collect even banking details of people. So we are just sounding a warning to you to say, please ensure that the act is complied with. Thank you.
It's just a temptation here to say, Mr. Musa, can you see the Constitution at work? Commissioner.
So as a follow-up, understanding your role and your warning that you might be the potential enforcer stroke regulator, what I wanted to find out is, the object of the Act, as you mentioned, is in relation to transparency. And while we are hopeful that the bulk of the people who are involved in donations and the bulk of the people who are sitting in positions in political parties are scrupulous and increasingly, you know, happy to be transparent and the most honest people we could ever hope for, the unfortunate part about life is that's not always the case. And so enforcement becomes an issue. So would you agree that, in principle, that even if the Act is for the purposes of transparency, enforcement is to ensure that that transparency has not been breached, and that would then comply with the purpose, because in a way it's the inverse? Just would like to hear your general opinion on that, notwithstanding the possibility of future regulation.
No, we agree, and that's the point that we're making. But in promoting that transparency, you also have to balance it against privacy. That's our point, really.
Thanks to both counsel for a very helpful contribution. And I think what you've made clear is that there's another piece of legislation that we've got to check ourselves against. Legislation, two of them. So there's two questions that underpin our regulatory regime. One is the question of discretion, and the other is the question of onus. As far as possible, we try to regulate so that the discretionary powers of our bureaucracy is limited to minimize the range of disputes that can arise internally and which might compromise our independence one way or the other. So for instance, the onus is, and the second question related to that is the onus. So when the rule says that you may vote only once, the onus is put on the voter to make sure that person votes only once. So in the same way, importing those principles here, when we talk about public interest, it's a loaded concept.
importing not just law but also morality, which can shift from one community to the next within our own country. But you mentioned that there are ways of standardizing it, and there are some very specific principles that might minimize discretion if we say, you shall not do this, you shall not do that, and if you do this, you'll be violating the public interest concept or prohibitions within the disclosure provisions of the law. So what I'm asking is it possible, and will it cure your concern if the public interest component is broken down to particular do's and don'ts within the regulation or the statute, so that the bureaucracy can exercise a tick box approach to if you know that you've not done this or not done this, and whether there's a violation or not. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, on the question of onus, we would like, in keeping with our strategy of shifting the onus on political parties and voters and the public, to take responsibility for the correctness of the information that they provide us by certifying it in some ways so that we are indemnified. Would that meet some of your requirements then? And we're not asking for advice, of course.
I will respond to the public interest definition. I have seen pieces of legislation where the public interest has been defined, although not conclusively. It will say public interest in this instance include the following.
Yes.
And then it will give those instances. You can do that.
Yes.
And decide what is in the public interest. But to leave that regulation as any other factor, I think it's too vague.
That
introduces subjectivity as well.
Sure.
In making that final determination. So you can decide and define, if you're going to include public interest, and then define what the public interest will mean in those circumstances. So the second one I will leave it to.
The issue of owners, for the donor or the contributor to indemnify you, the IEC, that the information is correct. I'll refer you to condition 8, because it says a data subject having provided proof of identity has the right to request that you to confirm whether you holding personal information of the data subject. But that doesn't discharge the you as a responsible party, the IEC, to comply with the conditions for lawful processing. I don't think you should push that to the donor as such. I think you also, as a responsible party, you have certain duties and rights in terms of the act.
We might be able to say, notwithstanding any other law passed before our law,
ours has primacy. We have to be very clear.
Okay.
POPIA takes precedent over any law that protects personal information. So
Thank
we
you.
Have to put that on record. And that's why we're here.
Advocate, thank you very much. I can see that even our technical team is looking forward to the one-on-one engagement with yourselves, which is in the cooperation between our institutions. But I think on behalf of the Commission, we would like to thank your office and its wisdom to actually make this public presentation, because as much as these things are in paper and written form and all of that, I think the process of this dialogue is in a very important national interest. And for all our institutions and all the stakeholders to continue as you're doing to engage the process is equally important for our country and also the evolution of the implementation of our
of our constitution. I think Mr. Musa was actually this morning located it in the historical context that this is, we are now dealing what is an unfinished business, and now we have to actually pace it up, because it is now also coming in the opposite direction of where the public sentiment is sitting at the moment in the country, and for us to be in a position to find that that particular balance, we really appreciate the inputs that you've made. I think they've also enriched the understanding of the role of the regulator as well. So we thank you very much, and we're looking forward to further engagements between our institutions. And hopefully there might be some advice. the right to know, was supposed to be here, and they have arrived. Okay, we will now invite Mr. Galan Chalif from the right to know. Just 1 second, I see Kate there. Okay. I think we will ask the next on the list, the African Independent Congress, to come forward and make the presentation. That's Mr. Makuke. Meanwhile, Mr. Mamabul, are you covered?
I'm covered, Chair. I thought that in the interest of us progressing, let's rather entertain AIC. We're not dealing with the sequencing of parties on the ballot, certainly. We just want to hear the submissions on the...
we have to be careful with the AIC, because the list on the ballot can be an issue, but we're clarifying in this case it's not a sequence of the ballot. Welcome, Mr. Mukwetle, the commission is honored once again to receive inputs from another represented political party and the African Independent Congress, and we can proceed. Introduce yourselves and the organization accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, to the commissioners, and let me just say all protocols observed. My name is Obram Tlongo from African Independent Congress. The person who's going to do the presentation for the AIC is Mr. Lebo Mukwetle. He is the researcher and the policy developer in the office of the Acting Treasurer General of the AIC. On my right, I have got him, and right at the back here, with, I don't know that color, yellowish color, we've got an Acting Treasurer General, Ms. Margaret Arnold from AIC as well. Thank you.
We can invite Yeah, please join me, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will now hand over to Mr. Mokwatle to do the honors. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Lebohang Mokwatle. I'm the researcher for the party based in Parliament. Let me just start by saying that we're going to be very succinct and brief, and we are not going to traverse some of the allotted areas that have been covered yesterday by the various speakers. I think some of the speakers today did, you know, traverse what others have said, so we'll not even canvas some of the points that they've stated. Suffice it to say that we participated during the discussions on the political party funding bill last year. In our participation in the National Assembly before the bill was sent to the NCOP for concurrence, we said the following, and I quote, that the political party funding bill, is the necessary intervention to root out corruption, to address limitations replete in the promotion of Access to Information Act, and to deepen multi-party democracy close quote. These regulations, Chair, are designed to give effect to the provisions of the Principal Act. We wish to entertain in our presentation some of the regulations. We'll entertain Regulation 4.1 and Regulation 16, respectively. Regulation 4.1 allows the Commission to retain any donation made to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund when, among others, it suspects or have reason to suspect that the source of the money is from the proceeds of any unlawful activity, 2, an organ of state, 3, a state-owned enterprise, and lastly, a foreign government or foreign agency. We argue that Regulation 4.1 has a number of limitations. For example, a contributor to the fund may have their contributions retained on mere suspicion. All what the Commission is required to do is to plead suspicion, whether remote or untested. This limitation implicates the audi alteram partem rule. This is because the Commission may retain any donation without giving a contributor audi. In our view, these powers carry the weight of stifling multi-party democracy, as it is the small political parties who will be hard hit by a minute multi-democracy fund. It is open secret that our democracy establishes a multi-party system of democracy to ensure accountability, openness, and responsiveness. The very essence of establishing a multi-party democracy fund was to breathe into life representative democracy. Representative democracy cannot flourish when the political parties, especially the small ones, do not have the resource capacity to conduct meaningful election campaigns, for example. It is our considered view, therefore, that audi be given to a contributor suspected of wrongdoing. This will be in line with the South Gauteng High Court decision in Mdwaba versus Nongqumba, which enunciated the constitutional semblance of the audi alteram partem rule in the following. And I quote, "The audi alteram partem rule is the fundamental principle of our law which is enshrined under the Bill of Rights in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act 108 of 1996, close quote. We now turn to Regulation 16, which provides as follows. Any person who makes a false statement or furnishes false particulars in any manner whatsoever and in any notice, declaration, or other written document required by these regulations shall be guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment or both, such fine and imprisonment in accordance with Schedule 1 in respect of such offence, close quote. Both the Act and regulations do not provide a definition of any person. The Commission may have to look into this.
Wow, nice and precise and short, but informative. I would like to invite my colleagues, if there's any comments, inputs, that they would like to make. Safe to say, these matters are we are noting all these inputs, and as you can see, our technical team on the far right is noting those issues and the inputs. Colleagues?
Just, I mean, in the regulations, and this is also subject to some review, there is an attempt, I think, possibly for the reason that you've identified to define person. Yeah. Have you had an opportunity to look at that definition, and do you have any comment on it?
Well, thank you. That's the point I'm making, that I've read the regulations as they stand and the principal act. I've not gathered any, you know, description of what any person entail, unless if I passively read, you know.
Okay, no, thank you. Thank you very much. I think we note the inputs, especially, you know, the problematic concerns around if the funds are suspicious and being the basis of them being withheld. But one would have appreciated then to say, what then do you suggest in that event? And for us, it's really not even about the size of the political party, because the most important issue is prevention of suspect funds entering our political water stream, if I may put it. Now, when something is suspect, if you don't prevent it, it may be too late. And so it is in that context, in that balance, as to what then could be a mitigating suggestion from the AIC, in that we still need to deal with the broader concern of minimizing and preventing undesirable funds entering the system. If there is any, we would appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think the principle is sustained to say that we need to deepen transparency and, you know, combat corruption and so on, and that you need to have systems in check. The point that we're making is that so I'm saying that the principle is sustained. The argument that you're advancing it's quite compelling. But the point that we're making is that before you act on a suspicion, and based on that suspicion, you then return a donation or contribution, I think it may be fitting to invite a contributor to make a representation to that effect, especially if one considers the fact that the multi-party democracy fund was designed to ensure that we deepen, you know, multi-party democracy. And in my view, it affects us, the small parties who, you know, who find ourselves, you know, trapped in the cycles, if you like, of limited resources and really despair, because sometimes we have to fend for ourselves. Yes.
Mr. Mokotla, let me thank you and the leadership of the AIC present for your inputs, and then proceed to invite, or we might be coming to an end, to invite the right to know to come and make their presentation, and understand it's Mr. Gallant. Okay. thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you for making
yourselves available and to make the presentation. You can proceed and introduce appropriately and make your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And thank you very much for the opportunity to address you in making this oral submission. My name is Ghalib Khaland. I'm the Deputy National Coordinator with the Right to Know campaign. On my left is Songezo Mazizi, a member of our national working group. We have submitted a written submission, and so you have that also before you. Essentially, we want to maybe amplify a little bit of what's in our written submission and raise some other questions that have arisen since then. Perhaps to say that the Right to Know welcomes the signing into law of political party funding. We've been advocating and agitating for it for a long time. We also welcome the commitment to move swiftly to the passing of these regulations so that we can implement the Act. We commend the Commission for drafting the regulation so swiftly and in a manner that seeks to give effect comprehensively to the Act. Maybe to make a few initial points, which is that South Africa's electoral democracy runs on money. And I guess that's partly why we need this piece of legislation. But the Constitution gives political parties a unique and sacred duty almost to make electoral democracy work. And that role requires funding. So we understand that. Posters must be printed, offices and venues must be hired, staff must be paid, buses must be chartered. All of this to bring democracy to the front doorstep of the average citizen. But herein lies the problem, that outside of relatively limited public funding, the vast majority of political party funding comes from private sources. A recent study showed probably five times what the fiscus is able to give to political parties comes from private donations. Until now, still continues, the relationship between money and politics has been shrouded in secrecy, and in that secret place, deals have been struck, policies have been influenced, and tenders have been bought and sold. And in essence, that means that the will of the ordinary South African has almost been outbid by those with deep pockets, by capital. So the Right to Know believes that the lack of transparency and regulation on private donations to political parties has created a climate of secrecy and political inequality. I want to stress that it's not just about the secrecy, but it's also the political inequality. And we've just had the previous speakers talking about multi-party democracy and how that needs to work and how it affects particularly the smaller parties. It's allowed, that climate of secrecy and political inequality has allowed corruption to thrive, but it's also eroded public faith in the electoral system. And in that way, it undermined the values in our constitution. So this issue that has been there for the last 20 odd years in our democratic South Africa has had some serious implications for us as a country collectively. So the mandate, we believe, given to the Electoral Commission by this legislation carries with it the burden, I would say, of reaffirming the public's faith in our electoral and political system and to reestablish the values in the Constitution in the aftermath of some bruising revelations of just how pervasive the undermining of the political process has become by money. And so I think the task put to the Electoral Commission, which we're very cognizant of, is that we've got to get it right in the implementation. And that's what these regulations are here for. We believe that this need for transparency goes beyond just the need, maybe the urgent and immediate need to root out corruption and malfeasance. The transparency is a crucial step towards greater political equality. So, for sure, we've got daily revelations coming out of various commissions about the state of corruption in South Africa, but that's one part of it. It really also is about creating a more equal political landscape upon which political actors and us all can play. So does this include knowing the private sources of political party funding? Absolutely. The public has a right to know who's bankrolling political parties and candidates that seek their votes and whose funds are spent. It's therefore important that this piece of legislation, this act, be operationalized as quickly and as efficiently as possible. We've already missed the moment in relation to the national and provincial elections this year. With less than 18 months to our next important election at local government, the implementation of this act and its regulations becomes crucial, we believe. We've made several substantive proposals in our joint written submission with MVC, and they've also addressed you before yesterday, on the operation of some of these regulations, especially as they relate to the public's access to information. Mindful of the current climate of a lack of trust in the political system, perhaps as witnessed most stridently by the lack of voter turnout in May, it's important that the principle of proactive disclosure and reporting should be adopted. So maybe to turn to some of the specific examples that we quote in our written submission, Regulation 4.3 and 4.4, for example, refers to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund and the process of non-disclosure. So there's a whole process of application not to disclose. We believe that it would be of enormous value to the public to have access to the following information relating to that. So the number of requests for non-disclosure that the Commission receives, the breakdown of the number of requests that were approved and those that were rejected, the monetary value, the cumulative monetary value, the reasons also for for requesting non-disclosure, and then a breakdown of the reasons from the Commission side, whether you grant it or not. So, if you remember, the MVC successfully took Parliament, I guess, to task around the promotion of access to information legislation. We have an opportunity in the way that we deal with political party funding and the regulation thereof, to make sure that access to information, the relevant information, is done in a better way rather than to put the onus on the public to request that information. So proactive disclosure, proactive reporting by the Commission should form a part of these regulations. So for example, in Regulation 8.5, it says that a record of disclosure shall be kept by the Commission and shall be available for inspection by any person during normal business hours at the offices of the Commission. So that's an attempt by the Commission to do so. However, you only have 9 offices, one per province, and the cost of travel for indigent people or someone who's interested in accessing that information becomes then an obstacle. So we propose that these provision must be made for making the record electronically available on a website and searchable. So it does talk to resourcing, but if we're true to our commitment to open democracy, then this would be one way that we need to look at. I want to turn to just some of the questions around resourcing, because that's been, of course, any implementation plan requires resourcing. And so we note your decision to roll out the implementation in a staged manner over 3 years, with the initial focus on chapters 1 to 4, and then looking at enforcement at a later date. So we support that decision insofar as it kickstarts the process. We're a little anxious that the process should be kickstarted and should have been kickstarted already. But we appreciate that these wheels do turn slowly. We understand that there will be nothing to enforce if the structures and the processes are not in place. So we appreciate that. But enforcement is a crucial aspect. Just to consider perhaps the example of Kenya, before their recent elections about 2 years ago, they also had introduced party funding legislation, but it wasn't implemented. And they go far further than our regulations or our act does by, for example, instituting caps on funding, campaign funding, which we haven't touched in our legislation. The problem there, though, is even though in some ways I think the legislation is a better model, it wasn't implemented. And so the amount of shillings that was spent in pursuit of that Kenya election ran into billions, millions and millions of rand. And with none of those checks and balances in place. The outcome of that is that on a monthly basis, a governor, a minister, a councillor, they run six elections on one day, gets arrested for malfeasance relating to party funding and campaign funding. And so the lack of that legislative and regulatory framework has consequences. That undermines much more the political and electoral system, not having this. So in terms of the phasing in of your approach, we appreciate that. Perhaps the three-year time frame is a little long, particularly given that we've got the local government elections coming looming. On resourcing, secondly, you should ensure that you have forensic investigators and trained staff with the requisite skills to analyze and determine the veracity of information. It may also be prudent to seek assistance from sister organizations, specialized unit within government, who have that kind of capacity, and we would be curious to see what kinds of steps the IEC is thinking of doing, in what partnerships you want to create. It's also important, we think, that the fiscus grant the Commission adequate resources to fulfill this function. This is a new function, and you need adequate resources, physical and human, to fulfill the task. My information is that it cost the Commission about 200 million rand to collect the addresses in the run-up to the provincial and national elections in relation to the Courts Directive. I wish to remind us that that was less than half of the 440 million rand raised by a single candidate in one party for an internal party election. So the money surely is there, and we need to look at how best to resource the Commission to do this important oversight function. I have two more points. The proposed regulations make no mention of a policy for the protection of whistleblowers, and we think this is a big gap. If a member of the public has knowledge of a disclosure that was made and it contained information, for example, that was false, inaccurate, or misleading, and the IEC is not aware of this, surely there should be provision made for that to be made to the IEC. And perhaps that's something one can look at. And then the regulations make no mention of how it will deal with donations from foreign entities. I know there's a ban, but the Act makes provision for funding from foreign entities for the purposes of training and skills development or policy development. So this needs some greater guidance, perhaps, we feel. Maybe lastly, just to pose a question. Section 10 of the Act says that no person may deliver a donation to a member of a political party other than for party political purposes. And further in subsection 2, that a member of the political party may only receive a donation contemplated in subsection 1 on behalf of the party. So the intention of the Act seems to want to regulate the public activities of political parties. So we get money in order to. Given the revelations recently about the cost and contribution by private donors to individual intra-party campaigns, would these donations fall within the scope of the Act? A donation to a member of a political party for a political party purpose? It's a question, and I'm sure it's something that the lawyers can apply their minds to. We would certainly, from a public perspective, want to say that given how much money flows internally into those processes, which are for a party, political party purpose, that those also should fall within the rubric of the declarations. In conclusion then, we appreciate the challenge that you face in producing these draft regulations in such a short time. They're broad and they leave room for changes, also in the forms and some of the processes. You're also wanting to be, we commend you for wanting to be thorough, also in calling for this round of oral submissions. Our comments, we hope, seek to strengthen the regulations by highlighting some of the areas that could require tightening or some clarity. These are forward-looking. They unfortunately were silent on the content of the first submission. And so perhaps we should be saying that for the first submission, it should be retrospective for a 12-month report, report rather than the monthly or quarterly requirements that are stated in the Act. So the longer we delay the implementation of these regulations, the more that time disappears. I'm very keen to find out what happened to that 1 million rand given to a political party that they then wanted to give back but couldn't because the money was spent already. Perhaps that particular incident highlights a different question, which is the Act talks about no money may be given by SOEs, for instance. In that particular case, there's a lot of public money invested in the company run by that particular individual. The PIC, for example, is very invested in the group. Exactly where is the line of public monies and private monies? And will our processes set up in the Commission in looking at those donations be adequate to discern the difference? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gallant, and we appreciate the comprehensive inputs that your organization has made and also the presentation that you're making now. I'll now invite the colleagues to seek matters of clarity or comment. Vice Chair?
So I'm not sure whether you were here earlier on, but I think some thinking about some of the questions that you raised were implied in some of the earlier submissions that were made. But I wanted to touch on three issues. I think that you've heard that political parties, both yesterday and today, have indicated that for them to get to a point of compliance just with information that is required of them demands that they put in place different or improved or strengthened systems. So I think that the idea of retrospectivity, aside from the aversion that any court would have to it, would be an aversion that we would share, because it, you know, I can't imagine why one would want to look retrospectively when those kinds of challenges are apparently, from what we've heard, real. Having said that, I mean, you know, your comment on that, because you've suggested some sort of retrospectivity, and I'm not very clear why. I think the second thing is that you refer to Section 10, prohibition of donation and so on, and you mention, you read out, for political party purposes, and then you ask the question whether or not that would apply to internal party processes. Well, I mean, I think maybe you are first of all answering your own question. I can't imagine that you would be elected to a political party position if it weren't for a political party purpose. I mean, you know, they don't usually have mascots, so I don't know why. I'm not quite sure what you would be suggesting, but it seems to me that that would be implied. But it also arose, I think, from a presentation we heard earlier this morning, that political parties themselves are looking at those internal processes, and they raise that as part of their submission. So I'm assuming that it's common cause, but maybe you are going to highlight to us a different way of interpreting that. You know, I would want to hear you. And then, you know, the last thing is on your issue of whistleblowers. You speak about the possibility to have a policy, and I wondered whether you had any suggestions to make, not necessarily now, but this could be something, if you say yes, we could engage further on what the key elements of that policy would be that would be particularly relevant to this legislative framework.
So thank you very much for those questions. In terms of, so I guess the call for retrospectivity comes from in reaction to, I guess, some of the revelations that have been made in the public domain. As a legal principle, I appreciate retrospectivity in law is something that's frowned upon, which is partly why we were suggesting just the last 12 months. Given that submission will in fact have to take into account donations in received when. So there's a period. What's that period going to be is really the question, I guess, there. When we made the call in March, it was with a view, I guess, to the national provincial elections that we were staring at, to get some insight into just how much money had flowed into that particular election. We're also cognizant of the fact that this is a lot of this in the last many years has happened behind a veil. So the full extent of how much money actually slushes around in our political processes is not available. Going forward, we hope that will become more clear. So on that part, we asked the question around the internal processes, really because I guess when the thinking of the Act was there, it was looking at how political parties themselves run their elections and particularly their campaignings before an election. What has come to light in the last several months has been shining a light on some of the internal processes of political parties, and particularly their own internal elections. So I am pleased that it's common cause that those internal processes and the monies donated to individual members does form part of the ambit of the Commission. With regard to whistleblowers, I guess there our question would be really in the context of the overall lack of protection for whistleblowers that we find in South Africa. So this is really important work, particularly the offences that are named in the regulation and in the Act. So we should be looking at the framework for whistleblowers, protective disclosures legislation, for example, and for certainly we could engage further around precisely how that might look in the context of party funding. I guess we wanted to highlight the vulnerability of whistleblowers, generally speaking, and particularly how even our official state organs treats whistleblowers, which is not in line with open democracy principles. So building in some safeguards for whistleblowers in relation to this particular area would be important. Perhaps just to say that where huge sums of money are at stake, things become dangerous and even mortal danger. And we've seen many people involved in dubious party funding activities losing their lives. I remind us of the Petro SA situation, for example, maybe a decade and a half ago. So the protections for whistleblowers, someone who does come forward with information that would be relevant for the Commission, should be something that we look at.
Mr. Garland, I think we've come to the end of the presentation and presentations, and once again, on behalf of the Commission, we would like to thank you and your organization for the comprehensive inputs that you've made in this process, and we look forward to our continued engagements with yourselves, because it doesn't end with this representation, and there may be some other matters that we might have our technical teams wishing to discuss with yourselves, so that we can strengthen our democracy. Once more, thank you very much.